Hey, Emily.
Hey, Greg.
So we were at the NHL All-Star Game this past weekend together, and it was great because we sat next to Linda Cohen, which is like watching Mystery Science Theater 3000 version of the All-Star Game with one of the funniest sarcastic people we've ever met, talking about the performances of all the players. She'll be on later, by the way. And so we both were able to witness the unparalleled splendor of Gritty in his element. For me, for the first time, I don't know if you've been to a Flyers game to see Gritty yet, but I had never seen him in action.
No, it was
And I
my
gotta
first time
tell
in
you,
his presence, yes.
yeah, I gotta tell you, I was impressed. I was a little impressed.
My favorite moment of the night is when the game is going on and all of a sudden, I think it was you who alerted and goes, "Is Gritty climbing over people in the stands?" And he literally was doing the reverse crowd surf where he was just toppling people's heads, I believe probably just to go to the bathroom.
He was standing on the armrests as well, climbing up one of the 100 level sections. The other thing that was amazing about Gritty, because our friend Chris Daniels from Seattle was doing some filming down in the bowels of the arena, the ability of Gritty to do the head whip Google Eye move is pretty incredible. Like, it is clearly like the most grittiest thing that Gritty does. It's sort of his thing, his trademark, if you will. Kind of like Bailey dumping popcorn on people or SJ Sharkey putting kids' heads in his mouth. But it is super effective. I could probably watch that on a loop. And I think I might have actually on Chris's video.
Well, Greg, I'll
But
tell you,
yes.
you say it's very impressive, but it's because he's a seasoned vet. And I did a little reporting myself. I talked to some people at the Flyers, and
Oh.
did you know that Gritty IRL was another mascot IRL within the Flyers organization for 4 years? And the Flyers were saying that's why they were so shocked the first day when he fell, because they're like, this guy can skate. He's got experience.
Yeah, they were saying that he was the mascot for the Phantoms, right? Their minor league team.
It was either the Phantoms, it might have been another team, I can't remember.
Okay. But he was in the system and they got called up to be Gritty. And
And his life was never the same since.
life was never the same since. Also, should mention, as far as skating, Gritty took part in a practice lap for fastest skater against SJ Sharkey, I believe it was. Based on my timing of it, also beat Clayton Keller.
You
So
know
I don't
what?
know.
I've got the video from the NHL. I'm probably going to have to check the numbers. I just don't
And
know who to give the prize money to.
you would just be doing it to double check to make sure that Gritty deserves the prize money, not to for any nefarious purpose to discredit the validity of mascots in these events, right?
No, exactly. It's all about the numbers. For me, it's just about the integrity of the event.
All right. Coming up on ESPN and Ice. Kendall Coyne, fastest skater, participant, Minnesota Whitecaps player, U.S. gold medalist, Aaron Portsline to tell us what the hell is going on with Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky in Columbus. Plus lots more from All-Star Weekend and our Q&A, exclusive as it was, with Donald Fehr, Executive Director of the NHLPA, and of course, the blockbuster, Jake Muzzin trade. All that and more on ESPN and Ice. Let's start the show proper, shall we?
From the ice to your earbuds, a podcast about hockey, featuring things to do with hockey. From your friends at ESPN, it's ESPN on Ice with Wyshynski and Kaplan.
Everybody. It's ESPN on Ice, the podcast where ESPN talks about hockey. I'm Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer.
I'm Emily Kaplan, national NHL reporter.
And the All-Star Weekend is over. Burritos were consumed. More beer than burritos was consumed. Never
Speak
drink
for
with the
yourself.
Finns. The Finns will lead you down places you don't want to go when the Finns are in town. Don't drink with the Finns. Well, no, that's a lie. Drink with the Finns. Drink with the Finns if you're not worried about where it might go. But if you are worried about where it might go, drink with maybe the Norwegian guy is all I'm saying.
Singular.
Instead. Right, those because there's only one, right?
Proportionate to the number, there's a proportionate amount of
Right.
reporters to the number of players in the league. So the Finns
Correct.
reporter group has grown
Right.
greatly, and Matt Zuccarello is definitely covered.
That's right. There's only one Austrian guy talking about Thomas Vanek. And then there's only one Norwegian guy, but the Finns are growing exponentially. The Finns grow forever higher in numbers each season. Before we get to All-Star fun, we should probably talk about the big trade that went down this week. Jake Muzzin, it will be a vital piece of the Toronto Maple Leafs championship puzzle. Everybody's saying, you gotta bolster the blue line, Kyle Dubas. The defense sucks. This team could be pretty fun, but boy, is that defense terrible. And Kyle Dubas is like, I've got stats nerds. We're going to get the stats nerdiest defenseman in the whole world. So Jake Muzzin, analytics darling for the last several years, becomes a Toronto Maple Leaf, acquired for a first round pick and then, two prospects forward, Carl Grundstrom, and the rights to unsigned defenseman Sean Durzi in the deal. The first rounder, of course, 2019. It's going to be kind of low, but that's all right. It's a first rounder in what I think is a pretty good draft. And then Jake Muzzin, this year and then next season at $4 million a pop against the salary cap. The only real, you know, pickle for the Maple Leafs in this trade is the fact that Jake Muzzin is left-handed. And he will have to be a left-handed defenseman playing with another left-handed defenseman and Morgan Rielly. They're very heavy on the left side, not so much on the right side. But that is why the freight going back to the LA Kings is Carl Grundstrom and Sean Durzi and a first, rather than being Kasperi Kapanen or somebody along those lines, a blue chipper, if you will, because that's what you ante up for a right-handed D. But in a left-handed D, they get a pretty good one in Jake Muzzin.
There's so many things I like about this trade, and maybe it was because I hung out with so much Toronto media in San Jose, but like, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. Is Kyle Dubas the best GM in the NHL? Discuss. But, no, just kidding. But listen to this. I think it's really difficult sometimes to get a free agent and have him mesh with your team right away and expect that chemistry. He does this a month before the trade deadline. That's an extra month where you get this guy in your system to fix your leaky D and to work with the guys and develop some chemistry.
Gotta fix that leaky D. Gotta
Two,
about that.
Jake Gardner. They're not going to be able to afford him next year. He's also making $4 million, a slight over this year. He's going to be worth far more than $4 million next year. Well, Jake Muzzin's under contract. You've got cost certainty to kind of shore up that defense, and I love that about it. And see, look, what is that first-round pick? It was very clear they were willing to give it up. I think they didn't have to get rid of any of their big prospects. They didn't have to get rid of Kapanen, like you said, or any real roster players. I see this as a really win-win. And from Los Angeles' perspective, look, they knew they were going to lose Muzzin. They do get a first-round pick. I'm not quite sure about this prospect. They don't know much about him. But it seems like a decent haul, like you said, for a left-handed D.
Yeah, and then you get a little bit of the old rings in the room kind of deal. Muzzin's been through the postseason war. Dubas kind of spoke out of turn last night on the conference call when he was talking about this trade, talking about how like the LA Kings were in kind of the same position as the Leafs are now when Muzzin came up. I mean, the Kings had a cup under their belt by the time Muzzin joined the team, but his point's taken, which is that this is a guy who has playoff experience in a way that a lot of these Leafs players do not. And the other thing too is what a wonderful gift for Morgan Rielly in what's been a career year to have a guy who ran shotgun for Drew Doughty during some of Doughty's best seasons to come and play the same role with Rielly makes a lot of sense. And like you said, you know, the deadline deal thing, getting him this early gets him in to kind of understand the system, understand the team, but it also means that you get out of the frenzy, you get out of the price increases, you get out of the potential bidding wars for a guy like Jake Muzzin. And that's a really smart move. I love teams that get super aggressive and make these deals early on. For the Kings, you know, the garage sale continues. Everything must go. That's not, you know, well, that's tradable. Yeah, or Drew Doughty or probably Kopitar and you know, guys.
That's about it.
Yeah, I mean, or there's probably some other guy. I mean, I think Dustin Brown's got some trade protection, so
sure.
You know, it's not easy to move those dudes. But in Jersey, they get a guy who's a right-handed defenseman. Super smart, not the most like incredibly skilled player, but a right-handed shot, with good hockey sense and, was a point per game player in junior. So I think there's some expectation that that's a nice little addition here and probably the reason to like it. And Grundstrom, he's sort of a grindy bottom six type that might have some offensive upside. And I think, you know, being on the Kings, they're going to give him a good spotlight, some good runway to figure out exactly what kind of player he's going to be. So listen, you know, for a left-handed D in a somewhat flooded market, I think it's a good return. And I think for the Leafs, they get a really smart addition, a guy who fits their philosophy, a guy who fits, I think, really well with Riley outside of the handedness, and the right age, the right money, and like you said, a guy that they can, you know, retain for the future. It's a really smart move. Is it a, you know, give them a cup kind of move? Well, hell no. They've still got Ron Hainsey on that defense somewhere. But I think it's a nice sort of building block move, for a team that, knows it needs to bolster the blue line in order to win a championship in this league.
Now, if you're another team right now and you're a fan of that team and you're like, my team needed a defense, what the hell? You know, they got this guy a month before the deadline. Well, you're kind of screwed. Your next available best available option is Colton Parayko. Well, the Blues, if you listen to Doug Armstrong's latest comments, I don't think they're as desperate as they once were. I think they like themselves as maybe we can make a little bit of a run and won't be huge sellers. And Colton Parayko was always kind of like, in my opinion, the, all right, we're throwing in the white flag. Let's do something crazy. After that, you got Alex Edler, who is a very good defenseman. He's 32 years old. He does become a UFA next year. It's unclear, though, if Vancouver might want to keep him around, if they're still in the hunt. And then after that, I think it becomes the Carolina guys. And in my opinion, the guy who's most likely would be Brett Pesce. You know, he's probably the most attractive of their bunch. And he's got 5 years left on term and comes at $4 yeah. million. So he's going to take a bounty to get back. And you know,
I think
Tom
so,
Dundon
yeah.
is, you know, they're asking clear- for the world.
Yeah, they clearly know what they want there. They want a top six offensive player, and I mean, and most likely a center. And they know they're dealing from one of the most stacked decks in the league with their defense. So I don't blame them for being overly cautious about that sort of thing. Sneakers agrees.
Hi, Sneakers.
Now, speaking of the Kings, they could use a little upgrade in talent up front, don't you think? And according to their Twitter machine, they did show some interest in potentially signing our next guest here on ESPN on Ice.
You're right, and I think they could benefit from this player's speed and tenacity. And I had a chance to catch up with Kendall Coyne, who, in my opinion, breakout star of the All-Star game, the morning after she competed.
It's now Saturday morning. What has the last 12 hours been like for you?
It's been surreal. It's been eye-opening, exciting. I'm just so excited for the future. Last night was a huge moment. It was a huge win. It broke some barriers, and just to see how excited people are, it's awesome.
So last night you were at the scrum, and what was really cool about it, I love seeing all the women there interviewing you, and a lot of people were so fascinated, but what was it like when you left the arena, like picking up your phone?
You know, it was funny. I actually, my phone was blown up more than it was after we won the gold medal.
Really?
I was obviously, you know, super humbled by everyone's support and especially my teammates. I heard from just about every single teammate saying, great job, we're watching you, cheering you on. And, you know, their support means the most because they could be here just as much as I am. So, you know, that was pretty cool.
So I know that's not a typical sprint that hockey players might make, the lap. So you came in Thursday and you did a test run, is that right?
Yeah.
Fresh off the flight?
Yes, yeah.
What was that test run like?
It was really cool. You know, I've never done it before, so to see my score and just to see, you know, generally where I would place. You know, I wasn't surprised that I was in the mix. You know, my speed's always been my strength, and you know, I think Cami Granato put it best last night when she said, you know, we're hockey players. We're not women. They're not men. We're hockey players. And so to have my score come in just right in the mix, you know, I wasn't surprised, but I think a lot of other people were.
Have you been aware of the traction that Brianna has gotten as well for her passing competition and people thinking that she probably actually should get some prize money?
Yeah. I think she took first place, and absolutely. I mean, I agree.
So what does the rest of your weekend here in San Jose look like?
So we're just engaging with some fans today, and then we're going to watch the All-Star game. And, you know, it's just been awesome to be here all weekend to represent USA Hockey, to represent women's hockey. You know, and the NHL embodies hockey is for everyone, and I think that's exactly what last night showed.
So something I struggle with as a journalist, because I cover the NHL and I cover hockey at large, and I don't think I do a good enough job of covering women's hockey. I really don't. I think I swoop in at big events, and here I am interviewing you, but, you know, for your regular season with the NWHL or other events with US hockey, I don't think I do a good enough job. What would you recommend for how hockey could be better covered in America, women's hockey?
I think that's a big piece of it. Women's hockey, you know, needs to be covered a lot more. You know, last night I think showed, you know, our game – isn't different than the men's game. There might be some different rules, but, you know, we train just as hard. We compete just as hard. We love the game just as much, and I think it takes people getting into the building, seeing us play, to realize how great, you know, our game is. And we have a huge opportunity this next month playing 3 games against Canada, all on NHL Network. You know, we're hoping to fill that building in Detroit on February 17th. So, you know, as people just getting out, supporting, you know, women's hockey like they do men's, and, you know, you won't be disappointed.
One thing that I think would be eye-opening to fans is some of the lengths that you guys go to train. What does your training look like outside of, you know, what you have in the structure of U.S. hockey or your NWHL team?
Yeah, it's a lot of individual stuff. It's tough because we're all over the country. So I play with my team in Minnesota, and then I'm in Chicago, and, you know, it's a lot of alone time trying to, you know, train. We're in the gym 4 to 5 days a week, on the ice 4 to 5 days a week as well. And so it's just, you know, preparing, you know, for that next competition or that next game. A lot of us, you know, practice on our own when we can, and you know, we look forward to the opportunities we get together with the U.S. team or our pro teams.
Practicing on your own, like Gigi Marvin once told me, she has to be your own coach. You have to come up with your own drills, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you try to find a skills coach wherever you live, and practice with, you know, boys team here and there. And but yeah, you know, hopefully one day we get, you know, a sustainable one pro league where we can compete, you know, like full on schedule like an NHL team.
What do you think the biggest holdup is to getting the merger of the leagues?
I think the biggest holdup is both leagues coming together and agreeing to merging into one league under the direction of the NHL.
One thing we talk about with NHL players, and it's hockey culture, is sometimes they don't feel comfortable marketing themselves as personalities like other sports do, because it's such a team culture, right? It's
yep.
We, not I. It's, you even say the pronoun you instead of I. Mm-hmm. Do you feel, as a female athlete, you know, you're part of a Team USA and you're part of teams, but do you feel like you can go out and get your own marketing opportunities and kind of maximize your worth as an athlete?
Yes and no. I think, again, hockey's a special place. Hockey is made up of special people. And I think regardless, male or female, we all kind of have that same thought process regarding our culture, that it is a very wee sport. I mean, going to the Olympic Games, I love our figure skaters, and I'm like, I don't know how you come here by yourself. Like, I would be so nervous. And
right.
I'm lucky that I have 22 other players and sisters to lean on in, you know, the biggest moment of my life. So I think, you know, there are opportunities, and we've seen that, you know, there's a lot of players who have amazing marketing opportunities. But I think at the end of the day, like, we're all about the we.
And it's so hard because right after the Olympics, you did your media tour and you guys were all together, but then everyone has to disperse across the country, right?
Yep. And that's where you kind of, you know, maximizing your own, your own, like, hometown.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Your own community. So
yes,
for you, it's Chicago.
Yeah.
Were you able to play on girls' teams growing up, or did you play with boys?
I played with boys, yep. And that's the difference, too, today. Like, girls can grow up playing girls' hockey. They don't. There are opportunities for girls to play girls' hockey, where most of us, when we were growing up, there wasn't girls' hockey.
As your career as an athlete, what was the hardest thing you've ever had to overcome?
I think the hardest thing has been getting respect. Oftentimes, you know, we've been labeled as a girl in a man's sport. And, you know, I think last night helped change that identity a little bit. And, you know, just that was probably it.
What do you want people to take away from your performance last night?
I think just, you know, barriers were broke. The NHL took a huge stance last night. You know, they always say hockey is for everyone. And, you know, they took that chance by making me the first woman to compete in the All-Star Skills Competition. And, you know, I think, you know, this will change things in the future, and I'm so excited for the future.
At the podium last night, you said barriers are broke. Was that something you thought about saying beforehand? Because it came off great.
No, it's just, you know, just how I felt. You know, you kind of speak from the heart, especially when there's all these people in front of you, and it's just, you know, like, I knew when I found out, you know, I got the chills, and I'm like, this is gonna be a huge moment. This is gonna be a moment that will change a lot of lives and a lot of women and a lot of young girls in hockey. And I hope it does. It seems like it is. And, you know, I'm just honored, you know, that I was the one that was able to go out there and, you know, skate my heart out and just prove to people that, you know, women are hockey players.
All right. So people listening to this, how should they follow you as an athlete?
You follow us, you know, you can follow all of us on social media. You know, we have our three big games coming up in February. Our rosters were just released. We heard Canada's game is sold out in London, so let's get that little Caesars Arena filled.
And, you know, you can say what you want about the women who participated and competed in All-Star Weekend, but I think it was so special just to see on social media how many people were showing pictures of their young girls saying, look at them watching TV and look how excited they are. But besides that, we discovered that women can compete in the skills competition. And did you guys all know that Discover is the official credit card of the NHL? And with Discover, you can show how much you love your team everywhere you shop with a personalized card featuring your favorite NHL team's logo and colors. But no matter what team you root for, Discover is committed to rewarding all their new card members with cash back match. Only Discover offers a dollar for dollar match of all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year, automatically. No caps, no signups. Redeem your rewards in any amount at any time, and they never expire. With all that extra cash, you can treat yourself to center ice seats to the game, your favorite player's jersey, or maybe buy some new headphones to listen to your favorite podcast on.
Mm-hmm.
Try it and believe it at discover.com/NHL. Only for new card members. Limitations apply.
Indeed they do. So NHL All-Star Game, obviously Kendall Coyne was the story of the weekend. Yeah, I thought it was real cool. In case people didn't see it, Emily had a picture from the Kendall Coyne press scrum after the skills competition, and it was like every woman reporter that was in the room crowded around the front of the podium waiting for her to show up. And it was a really, really cool shot of like kind of like encapsulating how important that moment was. The other big moment, of course, was Breanna Decker. We should probably talk about that a little bit, getting paid. She demonstrated the premier passing drill at the NHL All-Star Skills event on Friday night. Everybody who is unfamiliar with the names of these events, that is the one that is the nightmare mini net event. The one where grown men want to weep as they try to shoot the stupid puck in the tiny net and then carry the stupid puck over the barriers that light up. It's hot death. It's the worst event. They should get rid of it. But Breanna Decker did really well in it. She appeared to record a time of 1:06 in the demo, that would beat the eighth NHL player eight NHL player participants, including the winner Leon Draisaitl. So she would have won the event according to the timing that we saw. The timing was then double checked, which we'll get into later on. CCM decided to pay Decker, for quote unquote winning the event, $25,000. And then later on, the NHL gave all of the women who participated in the skills competition $25,000 to their favorite charities. And so that was an interesting move. What were your thoughts on the Breanna Decker saga at the All-Star Game?
Look, I understand where the NHL is coming from. They feel like they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. They did an incredible job integrating these women into what is really their event. Remember, there's two women's hockey leagues. One day the NHL will probably get involved. Right now it is not involved at all. Individual teams are partnered with certain teams, but the league has nothing to do with it. And the platform they gave these women, not to just promote themselves as athletes, but what they're really there to promote, which is this three-game series between USA and Canada, was great. That said, there's certain things the NHL does where I feel like they just shoot themselves in the foot. Where it's like, how easy is it just to give a $25,000 check the next morning? You hear it. You see the groundswell support. What does that money really mean to you? It means a lot to Breanna Decker, and it means a lot to women. It means a lot to a lot of your fan base. It means a lot of doing the right thing. And instead, you know, they don't come out and say it, but they do this kind of thing where they're like, we just want to check the tape and make sure we're really, you know, giving it to her if she wins. And no, we're going to reward these ladies. And, you know, they gave them all four checks to charities of their choice. And there's nothing against charity, but those ladies could use the cash.
Sure. Absolutely.
Their salaries, by the way, is probably about $25,000 a year.
Yeah. There you go. So all you do is get good PR out of it. But I'm sure there's some reason they went with the charity angle instead of actually just paying them. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
But it speaks to two things, really, this whole saga with Decker and with Kendall Coyne. One, the fact that it is baffling to me that women haven't been involved in the skills competition previously. There was talk about Hillary Knight potentially participating in the shot accuracy competition a few years ago. It never happened. But, like, the idea that her or Marie-Philippe Poulin or any star women's player couldn't participate in an event where you're just risking the puck at targets, you know, even if there was concern about women can't keep up with men, like, you're just standing there, right? It's insane to me that that didn't happen already. But now, you know, genie's out of the bottle, right? Like, I don't think you can go back. I think women should be integrated into many more of these events. And it speaks to something that I've written about on ESPN before and other places about how the NHL shouldn't be afraid about having ringers. I mean, look no further than the hardest shot competition where, you know, John Carlson did a heck of a job, and he had a faster, harder shot than Alex Ovechkin in the previous season, which is kind of a cool accomplishment. But come on, man. Like, bring in Shea Weber. Bring in Chara. Like, it is such a weak event now because everybody in the league is like 5'6" and 130 pounds. Overall, I thought the best skills competition was the goalie one, which is weird because, like, they're deprivers of joy. They shouldn't be the ones that really make the skills competition sing. But that event where Henrik Lundqvist won the save streak and he's competing against Vasilevskiy, he stops Stamkos to tie Vasilevskiy teammates, and then he stops former hated rival John Tavares of the New York Hockey Islanders, now of the Toronto Maple Leafs, to win the event.
I felt like it was the perfect metaphor for Henrik Lundqvist, where it's like just when you count it out, he still got it. But
right.
It doesn't really matter.
That's right.
Just a skills competition.
Incredible skill, best goalie on earth, doesn't win anything of consequence. You're absolutely right, Emily. That is Henrik Lundqvist.
And poor little Andre Vasilevskiy, who, you know, is on the sideline kind of pouting. They kept panning to him. And guess what? He might win a cup.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what did you think of the All-Star game itself this year? The Metropolitan Division one, I had to think about that for a second. Because it didn't really matter to me much. But it did matter. The only reason I remembered they won is because Crosby won MVP, which is amazing. A, because Crosby was at an All-Star game. And B, it's an actual accomplishment that Crosby hadn't gotten yet, which is kind of cool.
That's what I was honestly shocked when everyone was saying this is his first. Honestly, what I take away is the crowd was sucked out of it a little bit early. Because for the Pacific Division, which, you know, usually does well at these events inexplicably and had a really great roster, including three players of the hometown team, did not get to strut their stuff because John Gibson, who's been so heroic all year long for the Anaheim Ducks, sucked dirt. He just sucked.
He was terrible.
And I went down to his
Terrible to the point where I believe he threw the game in order to piss off Sharks fans. Like, there's a part, 10% of me
good
is like, he threw the game because he hates the Sharks and hates their fans. They're a rival. They probably chanted his name mockingly in the past. And he's just like, I'm going to give up 8 goals right now. Other things surrounding the All-Star game. We'll get to a couple of news items later, but obviously the other big story was puck and player tracking. That was being tested at the All-Star game. NBC loaded up all the gimmicks they could on their second screen experience so people can get a sense of how it's going to work. I wrote a big piece on it this week for ESPN about sort of like what comes next, the gambling aspects, the player concerns. I still think there's probably some concerns about the puck, to be honest with you, from what I gather. It doesn't feel right quite yet. But the NHL is going to take some time on this. It may not actually debut until next year's All-Star game as far as being in the league full-time. But I think it's promising. The one thing I find really interesting about it, to be honest with you, as sort of a journalist, is the idea of who's going to tell you why any of this matters. Like, it's cool that they can have all this stuff on NBC, and, like, Keith Jones can tell you, like, how fast McDavid's skating or how far away the defensemen are in their little triangle from each other.
Sure.
But unless you have somebody on the air that can tell you why that matters, like, I get enough trivia from Pierre Maguire on a nightly basis. I don't
do you?
Need any more. I think I get more than enough.
I think you'd like plenty.
I don't need any more.
I think you'll take all of it.
I don't need Pierre Maguire telling me what junior team the blue triangle between the defensemen played for. No, I just feel like there's going to be all this information and no one telling us why we should care. And, you know, unless you can tell me the speed of the shot, what it means in context to the player's other shots, what it meant in context to the player earlier this season or last year or similar players. Like, there needs to be several other levels of analysis that have to occur. And I gotta tell you, man, the last couple of years when we've been integrating analytics and advanced stats into coverage, I'm not that confident there's going to be people to do it, Emily. I'm a little bit wary of the fact that we're going to have people on the air who maybe don't even know how to use a laptop that are going to be trying to tell us exactly what the puck sensors are telling us from the on the ice. That's my concern.
Concern validated.
Thank you. But overall, it's going to be really interesting. And again, the idea that you can, you know, take out your phone and wager on what part of the net the puck is going to enter on the next goal. My God, I'm a little bit worried. I'm a little bit worried about how much money I'm going to be.
We're worried about my bank account.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about selling off my dog or potentially a car to fund my, sneakers can bring back a pretty strong return.
You know, for a fact. I get first right of refusal on that.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, that's how it works. We talked to Donald Fehr. If you guys are interested, it's a Q&A on ESPN right now that you can check out. Enlightening conversation. You asked a real good question that I know a lot of our listeners are interested in about the domestic violence policy and what the NHLPA thinks about it. What'd you learn from Don Fehr to that end?
You know, you typically think of the union as being oppositional from the league. And anything where the league has total power, the union would say, hey, that's not cool. And that's kind of the way the domestic violence policy is right now. It's dealt by with a case-by-case basis. Everything goes through the own investigation and comes up with his own discipline. And yes, the players get the right to the arbitrator, but to me, it just doesn't seem right. So I asked Donald Fehr about it, and I was quite surprised that he said, you know what? I think that everything should not be cookie cutter. It should be conducive. And he says, look, he wasn't going to comment on any specific cases, but he did mention that the most recent case, which is Austin Watson, even with the arbitrator's ruling, was very severe punishment. So, you know, anyone who's clamoring for the NHL to get a specific domestic violence policy to kind of keep current with the times, because the other four, you know, the three of the four professional major sports leagues in the North America have them. I don't see any call for reform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. And then, you know, as sort of a sidebar to that discussion, we also talked about the appeals process for suspensions mm-hmm. and whether he thought the NHL might go after it because they take so many L's when it goes to the neutral arbitrator. And Fehr said, quote, do I know whether they're going to come after it? No. Am I bothered by it? No. Do I expect the players would agree to it? Probably not. I think the players, that's a chip I bet the players could play, honestly, in these negotiations, is trying to change the appeals process, because the NHL's been frustrated and embarrassed a few times through it. So we'll see how that whole thing works out.
My big takeaway from listening to Gary Bettman talk, Matthew Schneider, who's Donald Fehr's executive assistant, he's really high up in the NHLPA talk, and Bill Daly, they said they were preaching peace, right? That this is there's a lack of tension that's been in other negotiations. We're feeling good about it. And Gary Bettman's mantra has been, we're not looking for a fight. So we asked Donald Fehr, are the players looking for a fight? And he says, no, of course not. And then I say, okay, but in the meeting so far, we've heard there's a lack of tension. Do you agree with that assessment? And I think Donald Fehr's quote is money and something that all NHL fans should remember. A win or loss counts just as much in game 10 of the season as is in game 75. Tension level might be different. We're closer to game 10. So yeah. Even though you're hearing everything is rosy right now, keep with yourself a healthy dose of skepticism, because the league's tendency is to have a work stoppage.
Yeah.
And get nasty.
Gary's never met a work stoppage he didn't execute. Back to on the ice stuff. A lot of news surrounding the Columbus Blue Jackets and the future of Artemi Panarin and also Sergei Bobrovsky. So we decided to invite our friend Aaron Portsline from The Athletic on to talk to us about what the heck's going on with John Tortorella and his club. Joining us now on the line is Aaron Portsline of The Athletic, a man who is worth the price of subscription with the information that he hands to you around the world, the ever-changing world of the Columbus Blue Jackets. So let's get right to it. Story on the site today as we do the podcast about Artemi Panarin. Basically, him and his agent decide they want to kick the negotiations on any contract down past the end of the season. And according to the headline, and you tell me if there's some dissonance between the headline and what you wrote, according to the headline, this means he's likely going to be traded before the NHL trade deadline. Do you concur with that?
I do, in fact. Yeah, I think this club has two significant UFAs. The other one is Sergei Bobrovsky. They don't have the control over Bobrovsky that they do over Panarin, because Bobrovsky has a no-move clause. He can control his destinations. I cannot imagine this front office that has taken such a long view of things, such a measured, patient approach. I don't think there's a way that they could justify both of those players leaving town with no return. A two-time Vezina winning goaltender, a point-a-game player, which this franchise has never had, to just let both of those guys whistle out of town on July 1st is almost unconscionable to me. Now, Jarmo Kekalainen today said they're not just going to take the highest bid and go, that they're going to set a standard, a bar for what they have to have in return. Of course, he's not going to get into specifics of what that is. But if somebody doesn't match that, then he'll probably carry Panarin through. But I'll believe that they're going to keep both of those guys here through February 25th when I see it.
Okay, I'll offer the kind of argument. They can't win anything without Panarin this season. You take Panarin off that team, they don't have anything. You might as well just fold up the tents before the playoffs. If you have Panarin, you might actually be able to do something in the playoffs if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, being the Metropolitan Division being what it is this year. That'd be my counter argument to why you keep him around, is in the words of many NBA hoopsters, Aaron, you shoot your shot, which is what they could do if they keep Panarin on the roster.
That's an argument. I guess I would say define something. They can do something in the playoffs. What does that mean?
Get past the first round for the first time in franchise history. That'd be something,
It would be something, yes. Would that be worth losing both of those guys with no return? I don't know about that.
So, Aaron,
Point is well taken.
It's clear to me that Artemi Panarin wants to test free agency. This is right as a player, and he's kind of circled this date as something he wants to do. So however the season ends, let's say they do trade him and he goes to another team. What chance do you think the Blue Jackets have of signing him on July 1st?
Well, that's been kicked about. I had a player today say, who knows what happens if he doesn't get what he wants out there July 1st, he can come back. And Jarmo Kekalainen said, if we do end up trading him, and he does go to free agency, we'll be knocking on his door July 1st. And I like the spirit of those conversations. I just don't, for the life of me, I can't come around. Why would he sign here July 1st if he's not willing to sign here right now? Like, I don't think this organization would nickel and dime him. I don't think they're offering him 5 years for $36 million. No, I think it's an audacious amount they would pay him. I don't think 8 years and $80 million is out of the question. He could get that. The only way he comes back maybe is if he's totally underwhelmed with what the offers are on the free agent market, which I don't know why he would be, because this is an absolutely dynamic player that can change the look of literally any lineup in the league.
Aaron, the one thing that I cannot wrap my head around is, for any other team in the league, it feels like this would be a really Wang distraction. This would, you know, be talked about amongst the players and maybe cause friction, but at least, you know, right, from my periphery and, you know, anytime I check in on this team, the players are all saying the right things. They're still winning. They seem like they still get along with the guy. Like, how are they keeping this together? What's the reason for this?
Well, and of course, they have the cool and level head of John Tortorella at the top,
of
right?
Of course. Yeah, he sets the tone.
Yes. you know what? I think many people have an opinion or a vision of Tortorella that is the caricature of the man, I should say. He does reveal that side of him. It's part of him. I think he deserves a ton of credit for this. They had another team meeting today where he is nothing if not honest, or honest is not entirely the right phrase. He is nothing if not out front about things. And this team, from the start of training camp, They had a meeting. Not just the goalie and the forward and the coaches. It's going to be everybody, the entire team. And they've talked about this is what's going to happen this year. It's going to get loud at times. It's going to get awkward at times. But we're going to throw it all right out here. When Bob left the team, a bench in Tampa Bay, and was suspended for a game, his come to Jesus, I apologize, I was a bad boy meeting was not just with the coaches. It was with the management, the players, the coaches, in front of everybody. I think that has helped. I still think it's full credit to all of them for keeping it together to this point. They're still right in the thick of the Metro. They're in a playoff spot today. I still think these next 4 weeks are going to be really, really difficult because they're weighing. It's tough for any team this time of year when you think guys are going to get moved. They're weighing two really big pieces here. So I think the biggest challenge for them is still ahead of them, but full marks for the way that they've handled it at this point.
Last one for me, Aaron. If things somehow go sideways, which they could if they move two big pieces at the trade deadline, is there any danger of Jarmo losing his gig here? Or is he the man going forward?
You know what? I think he is seen as somewhat of a sympathetic figure in all of this. I don't think he's done anything bold or untoward that has led to any of this. I think of previous GMs here and how it would have been handled in the summertime. And I think Jarmo's had a very measured professional response to this. Of course, he'll be judged on the return he gets for this. He'll be judged on should he have traded him previously. But I don't think anybody looks at the situation and thinks that there's anything he could have done differently to avoid this.
Okay, last one for me, Aaron, and we will let you go. The one thing, you know, I feel like we focus so much on Artemi, and maybe that's the sexier of the two, but what about Bob? What about Bob? But, you know, beginning of the year, we know that the contract negotiations didn't go the way he wanted. And then the next we kind of hear about him is this whole scuffle when he leaves the team bench and it kind of becomes a thing. I'm curious, just being around every day, is there anything you can share with us about, A, what his demeanor has been like, B, his place on the team, C, his mindset, that might be able to shed a little light on where he stands?
I do think there's a sense that he has become different than he was when he first got here, when he was this hard-working guy who was discovered by the Flyers and pulled out of a scrap heap in Russia. Someone discovered this guy, and he became a really strong player and just a great story. And he helped elevate this team, I think, to a level of respect. Well, I know, to a level of respectability that they never had before. And now he's almost a victim of that bar lifting, if you will, where now the standard is do something in the playoffs now. And that's really where all of this comes from.
Aaron Portsline from The Athletic, thank you so much for joining us, man. Great information as always. And everybody do check out his work on The Athletic. Climb over that paywall. It's worth it for Aaron's work. He's one of the best. Thanks, man.
Amen. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you.
Our thanks to Aaron Portsline of The Athletic again. It's a guy worth your time. The Athletic's Columbus Blue Jackets coverage is really good. They cover it in a number of different ways. You got Allison over there. You got Portsline. You got a bunch of people doing some real fun stuff. Now it's time for our favorite segment of the week.
Phil Kessel loves hot dogs.
No, he does not love to eat hot dogs.
Our weekly look at sad hyperbole and strained narratives of the hockey media.
Good one, Randy. Good one.
All right. It's time for Phil Kessel loves hot dogs. Our favorite segment of the week, because it looks at the foibles and the mistakes and the hyperbole of the hockey media. Going to visit my old stomping grounds. I like Justin Cuthbert. I think he's a good dude. Writes some good stuff, does some good videos. I'm only putting this here because multiple people in the hockey press corps came up to me afterwards and said, what the hell was that question? So I will now read it to you verbatim. This is Justin Cuthbert's question to Gary Bettman at the Gary Bettman press conference after the player tracking presentation at the All-Star game. Quote, Gary, how much concern is there about what's happening in Edmonton, appreciating the fact that Connor McDavid, considered the best player in the world, has to come to an NHL All-Star game, which is supposed to be a fun event, supposed to be an event where he can sort of escape what's going on in his own rink. And he has to field, quote, unwanted and uncomfortable questions at media day, as he did yesterday. To which Gary responded, are you referring to the fact that the team isn't winning as many games as Connor would like? Or they recently changed the general manager? Or is this something else?
Also, to be noted, Gary was feasting. You could tell he got into feast mode.
Yeah, he was feasting. And finally, after clarification, Bettman went into a soliloquy about how it's tough to win in the league and has the utmost confidence in Bob Nicholson and yada yada. This team is like near a wild card spot. I mean, I know that they're not good, and I know that they've had trouble, and I know that it sucks that Connor McDavid ain't in the playoffs, but I mean, this is the kind of question that you reserve for, like, a team that has 19 points on the season. I mean, it was a weird question because he sounded like Connor McDavid's press agent being like, why does my client have to be besmirched by these horrible questions at All-Star Weekend? And at the same time, it's also like, dude, he's on a team that's struggling. Like, you could ask that question about a number of people. You could ask that question about a number of people that weren't at All-Star. Ask it about Anze Kopitar. How tough is it for Kopitar that he's not at All-Star game? Because his team sucks.
Not to go on a total journalism holier-than-thou rant, but not only was it kind of an inappropriate place to ask the question, but it was just a leading and long question, and this is my problem with media these days. Honestly, it might have been okay if he said, Gary, do you have concern about what's happening in Edmonton right now? Leave it open-ended, yes or no. I would have been curious to see Gary's response, but just the long-windedness, the leadingness of it, he clearly was trying to get on something. It just didn't sit well.
And his response was exactly what you would what we heard, which is, you know they're in good hands, like Allstate. So, but again, the unwanted questions at media day, they're all unwanted questions at media day. None of these guys want to be there. Like, what is that? We're asking, they're at media day, waiting to see, you know, if they have to shoot the puck at the little target or skate real fast. And we're like, what do you think about the CBA? Like, nobody wants to answer these questions at media day. That's the whole point.
Meanwhile, all their friends are posting pictures on Instagram from Turks and Caicos.
Right. Exactly. David Pasternak came back from Cancun or something to come to the media day so someone could ask him about the World Cup. Not happening. They're all unwanted.
So we didn't know
this,
the World
this wins
Cup
the Kessel
was
Award, not because I'm trying to take a run at Justin, but because many other people took a run at Justin and unfortunately probably didn't inform him of this at media day, which is how the hockey media works. All right, now it's time for a weekly segment on the show in which Sachin Chandon gives us a bit of trivia. It's Satch Got Your Number.
All right, so here's a number, 971. Is it the number of goals scored this season by players from Ontario, or is it Juice Saros' save percentage in January?
First of all, I think it's UC Soros, but I'll take Juice.
Give me
all
that
day and all night. Juice
into my veins.
Yeah, it makes him sound like an emo rapper. Look, I'll take 917 goals by Ontarians. No, I'm going to say it's the save percentage one. That's the other one seems too high.
Okay, I'll go with Ontario men because there's not enough of them in the league.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go.
There have been 971 goals scored by players from Ontario, most of any province or state.
Did I win?
Yeah, I think you did. So congratulations. I think that puts you back on top in the competition, doesn't it?
It does, for those of you, and there's many of you, who keep track at home.
Yeah. On a damn true-false question, basically.
Where I pick second.
Right.
Crushed it.
All right, joining us now for the Ask Linda segment is our good friend Linda Cohn from In the Crease on ESPN+, the only nightly highlight show you'll need in your life. And as someone that we had the pleasure of hanging out with in San Jose during All-Star Weekend, Linda, have you recovered from all the fun and merriment of the All-Star game?
Yes. Yeah. No, first of all, you guys took it to the next level. It was so much fun, you know, hanging out with you guys and, you know, just the stuff we were talking about, which can't be repeated. We'll let it go there. But one thing about being at the All-Star game, which, you know, I've been to several. I haven't been to as many as you guys, but you know, it reminded me that it is significant, that it is important. And it's the family atmosphere. I know I sound like I should be doing an NHL promo, but I went down, up and down on so many elevators with so many moms and dads of these players and family members. And it was just like a nice feeling I got from it. And, you know, I think if anyone, any of your listeners have never had a chance to go to an NHL All-Star game, they really should. I know it's in St. Louis next year. You know, it's another kind of a chilled town where it's manageable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a fun event to go to.
For sure. All right, Linda, your question this week comes from Kara Talks Hockey on Twitter, a.k.a. Kara. What team desperately needs to make a trade?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I was on doing an interview yesterday, and I was thinking it should be the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then they went out and they got what they needed, added depth on the back line with making the big deal for Jake Muzzin. You know, that. So there goes my answer there for Toronto. But I think if you look at the contenders right now and, you know, serious contenders, and one of them is the Calgary Flames, I don't know if, you know, David Rittich can carry this load. I would look to get Cam Talbot or add some goaltending depth. I have no faith in Mike Smith. I know what they pay him and everything. But, I mean, Calgary is the real deal. And I just think they need to do something, because I think they have an opportunity this year to really, you know, make the big jump with Bill Peters behind the bench. And because they're that close. They have tremendous depth. They're a heavy team. And I think they make a very good playoff team.
Well, what about Sergei Bobrovsky? Go one up from Jimmy Howard.
Ooh. Jimmy Howard doesn't move the needle for me, even though he's a great guy and he's getting up in years. Bobrovsky is just the roll of the dice in the playoffs, right? I mean, I don't know.
I'd rather have him than Cam Talbot.
Yes, because Cam is a little mixed up. True.
All right, Linda. Noted goalie aficionado and Flames fan, Linda Cohn. Thank you so much for joining us.
I bet you never thought I was going to bring that, make it Calgary Flames. It's all goalie. But yeah. My pleasure. Thanks. Greg and Emily. Have a good one. Talk to you soon.
Now it's time for Puck Headlines. Dateline, February 2021, speaking of the World Cup. One of the hot topics at the All-Star Game was the idea that even though we're not getting the World Cup of Hockey in September 2020, it's been postponed, what have you, by the NHL and the NHLPA, there is a chance for them to make some greenbacks at the February 2021 break. Instead of an All-Star Game and a couple of bye weeks, maybe we slot in an international hockey event. Here's where it gets fun. The NHL's like, we don't have time to put a World Cup in February. Oh, no. It's going to have to be like a Ryder Cup or something like that. And the NHLPA's like, what? You guys shut down your season for the Olympics every 4 years. You can't do it for a World Cup where we actually make money? So what do you think is going to happen in February 2021 with an international event?
I think they have, and I think it's part of a long-term international calendar, which those three words is like the buzzword of my weekend. How many times did you hear it? Long-term international calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's happening.
I think something will happen. I tend to believe that, I kind of side with the NHL here, that it might not be enough of a window for a World Cup. You also have to, like, organize it and clear out buildings and stuff like that, because they're going to do it in separate sites. But, frankly, I think the timing of the event without the necessity of exhibition games could work.
Mm-hmm.
I just worry about, like, building availability and that sort of thing and what have you. But I know the players would be all for it because they'd make money and guys would get super long vacations, which is why they all want to go to the Olympics. Because you know what? That fourth liner on your team, he knows he's not representing his country, but he sure knows how to get to Turks and Caicos for a few weeks while his friends are playing for, you know, Slovakia.
But it's also important for the Slovakians. You don't know.
Yeah, that too. You know, gold medals and such. The Pittsburgh Penguins, Dateline Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Penguins are 5-5 in the last 10. They've lost two in a row, including one to the Devils coming off the All-Star break. What are your expectations for Pittsburgh in the next couple of weeks as far as the trade deadline, things like that? We've already seen Jamie Oleksiak sent back to the Dallas Stars. Big changes coming?
Yeah. Whoever put on Twitter, TIL, that the Pittsburgh Penguins are the farm system for the Dallas Stars. Yeah, I think Derek Brassard is gone. It's really unfortunate for him entering UFA year, but this was not his year, and he no longer fits into Pittsburgh's plans. And I think Jim Rutherford is the wizard that he is. He's going to get a player that you didn't expect them to get. Maybe it's one of the top guys. Maybe he trades with Anaheim again, and it's like getting a Jacob Silverberg or something like that. But I see them making a move for A, a scorer, or B, a defenseman. Maybe they're in for one of these Carolina boys.
I think there's a chance that if Matt Duchene and Ottawa can't work out their contract, they go after Matt Duchene.
Yeah, I think there's a chance for anything with the Penguins.
Oh, that'd be fun. I don't know where you put him, but it'd be fun. Dateline.
You put him as a fourth line center and you just ball out.
There you go. Why not? Dateline Outdoor Games. The Dallas Stars will face the Nashville Predators in the Winter Classic next year. And the LA Kings, for some reason, will play. Oh, there's a phone ringing. Will play Colorado at Air Force. The Predators are the team that I wanted in the Winter Classic. The LA Kings are a weird flex for the outdoor game in Colorado.
Well said. I think the only problem I have with the Predators, honestly, is I would have loved for them to wait a year and for them to be able to host either the Winter Classic or Stadium Series or something. And I know people say there's not an arena that makes sense there or a venue. Put it in Vandy Stadium, whatever, make it intimate. But you're not flexing the stadium with Nashville. You're showcasing the atmosphere in the city. And I'd love for them to be able to do that. And sometimes when you're in a game, precludes you from doing it for another couple years. So that was my only bummer there.
Dateline kids interviewing players. We like this. It happened at Media Day. It happens a lot at Media Day. I am personally a fan of some of it. I thought Joey Jr., Blackhawks reporter back in the day, was one of the single greatest bits of viral marketing that the Blackhawks have ever done. And sometimes they ask great questions, and sometimes the players let their guards down. But I think there were actually more kid reporters at NHL All-Star Media Day than newspaper reporters this year, from what I gathered.
Yeah, it was a little depressing on the media front, to be honest, at our PHWA meeting. Like, we couldn't even do a full decorum, and I have no problem talking about this because I think that's what's wrong with hockey media these days. It's just a lack of numbers and resources. Look, I go two ways on this. Part of me wants to, you know, be big, bad journalist and saying they're taking away our time and this is a press event and this is our only access to these guys. And part of me is like, look, this isn't a press event. It's a fan event. All-Star Weekend is a fan weekend. It really doesn't matter if we cover it or not. It's all about the sponsors and the fans. You saw that when they invite people to spectate on this. And so, yeah, when you get a little player up there asking Henrik Lundqvist something and he gives, like, actually a really heartwarming response that shows a little piece of him, and maybe Lundqvist is a bad example here because he does show off his personality a lot. It's kind of sweet.
Yeah, I mean, and it also helps get rid of those unwanted questions when the questions are, what kind of Pokemon would you? Dateline, Kevin Hart's ice bath. My God.
Not a place Nashville... I want to be. Woof.
Nashville Predators star PK Subban and comedian Kevin Hart appeared in an episode of Cold as Balls, a sports show in which Hart interviews athletes in an ice bath. Here is Kevin Hart and PK Subban.
And why is the puck black? Why?
Because the ice is white.
Oh, right. They can't make a white puck.
So what? Should there be black ice and a white puck?
Exactly.
I'm with you, actually.
You gotta look between the lines, brother. All the white men with these sticks hitting the black puck.
I got you.
It's pretty great, actually. Honestly, it's worth your time. It's like 12, 13 minutes long, but it's pretty funny. And PK's great. And maybe to get the old PK back, we just need him to hang out with, like, celebrities and comedians instead of, like, hockey people. But it's pretty great. All right. That's the show for this week. Rant Line returns next week. We were just jam-packed with a lot of stuff. Our thanks to Kendall Coyne. Our thanks to Aaron Portsline. Our thanks to Linda Cohen, as always. You can read my stuff at Wyshynski, Wyshynski on Twitter, and all of the articles that I write are on ESPN.com.
Ditto at Emily M. Kaplan, and all I gotta say is bye.
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 This has been ESPN on Ice with Wyshynski and Kaplan. Subscribe to the show in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.